It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this week, SpaceX had to delay the launch of an unmanned cargo ship headed for the International Space Station. Some of that cargo includes spare parts needed by the space station scientists. But very soon, because of 3D printing technology, people in remote locations such as the space station will be able to create their own spare parts and tools on the go. Last fall, the first zero-gravity 3D printer was sent to the space station, and test parts have been created based on digitally downloaded designs. This news, along with the announcement of a large General Electric additive manufacturing facility coming to Pittsburgh, highlights the major advancements in 3D printing technology and its role in the future growth of our technology base. University of Pittsburgh Professor Howard Kuhn is a well-known researcher and consultant in the world of additive manufacturing / 3D printing, and he joins us to talk about the advancements and evolution of the industry. Professor Kuhn, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
Let's start by talking about the recent manufacturing of parts in space. This sounds absolutely fascinating. What do you know about the project?
Well, several months ago, a NASA contract was let to a company called Made in Space. And what they did was modify a conventional 3D printing process to be used in zero gravity of the International Space Station. And it was sent up there in September. And in November, the first part was produced, a very simple little part that was nothing more than a label, just to get started. But more recently, in fact, a couple weeks ago, prototype of an actual tool was printed on their machine, and since then, there were several other parts. In fact, a total of 19 are to be made at on the space station with this Made in Space 3D printer. And those parts will be shipped down, back down to Earth, and compared with the same 19 parts produced on the same machine but on Earth. And that will determine the effect of zero gravity on the production of parts. And this is just one baby step toward eventually being able to produce metal parts and actual tools in space.
How complex are the space station printers right now?
It's the one that is in the International Space Station right now is the simplest of all the additive manufacturing processes. There are seven different technologies that encompass this industry of additive manufacturing or 3D printing, and this one is the simplest. It involves a process basically similar to a glue gun, where plastic material is heated and extruded through a little nozzle, and that nozzle is articulated in a plane, and it's let's say an XY plane, and then elevated to the next layer thickness, and then performs its operation in the next XY plane, and in that way builds up a three-dimensional part one layer at a time, and so that is the it's the most elemental of all the seven technologies used for additive manufacturing. But as I said, it's a baby step. It's the way you start. It's the way you get involved in a deeper way in making real tools in space eventually.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer and our guest, University of Pittsburgh Professor Howard Kuhn. If you have a comment or question about 3D printing technology, you can join our conversation with Professor Kuhn by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Dr. Kuhn, talk about the fact that some people have personal 3D printers in their homes. How does the, just for a point of reference here, how does the space station printer compare?
That is the technology that most people have available or can
the
buy.
The same stuff?
Same. It's the same process. And you might think that's strange. But as I said, the way you start a large program like this in space is to start simple and learn as you go. If you look back at any other development in space, it started slow, and you learn from each step. And your ultimate goal, of course, is to, in this case, be able to provide repair tools, repair parts, not only in the International Space Station, but eventually on a lunar base and a Martian base. And so there's a long way to go, but you get there by these slow steps. And so starting with this simple technology is quite reasonable. It is the same technology that is available at reasonable cost. Many people have them in their homes. In fact, if you get onto SW Randall, you'll see a little kiosk in there in which you can print little toys or little emblems. They're not very large, but you can print using the same technology. It's very interesting to see how widespread it has become. And you'll see makers around the country, as they're known, coming up with all kinds of innovations using these relatively simple machines. So that, in other words, instead of extruding just plastic, they are making chocolate desserts.
Out of a 3D printer.
Out of a 3D printer.
Man.
So instead of extruding plastic, you would extrude chocolate and then be able to build a three-dimensional shape of your choosing.
You know, there's the famous scene in the movie Apollo 13. Have you seen that film? There's the scene, and this is based on what actually happened, and this was the Apollo flight where because a CO2 filter stopped functioning properly, there was a chance, among other things, as they had to turn around and come back to Earth. They couldn't end up going to the moon as the mission had intended. And so and they depict it in the movie where the astronauts have to build a CO2 filter. They're not going to survive without it. And the guy in mission control walks in and says, we need to make this fit into this using nothing but that. And he just drops like a bunch of stuff on the table, and it's the same as what the astronauts have at their disposal in the capsule. Could 3D technology come through in an emergency?
It could in an emergency. In this particular case, I doubt if there would be enough room for the printer along with everything else in that particular capsule. But in other circumstances, it very well could, particularly if you project outward toward, as I mentioned before, a lunar base or a Martian base. Now you have things more stabilized, more stationary, a lot more room, and emergency still can and will perhaps occur there. So, but on in transit, it's difficult to imagine that you could do that, at least at this stage. Now, that's not to say that in the future there'll be sort of miniaturized versions of these 3D printing machines so that you could make small parts like that in the capsule.
And is there a chance, as with everything else, that in the future, I mean, when you think about what computers looked like 50 years ago, I mean, they filled up the whole, you know, they did fill up one wall in a building, and now probably, you know, something that you hold in the palm of your hand today can do the same thing that all of that apparatus did.
Absolutely.
So is there the chance then that the 3D printers could be built much smaller and that in the future they could fit into a cabinet on the capsule somewhere, on the ship, I should say.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question they could eventually be made smaller. But the problem of expecting to go to the same level of size, real small size as computers are now is really a bit asking too much because you're still dealing with three-dimensional material.
Right,
so you have to start with real material. However, the process still can be miniaturized somewhat.
When it comes to the materials that are used for 3D printing, most people have seen the novelty plastic items. You mentioned chocolate. You can use other materials. What in addition to that, what are some of the other things that are being added to the process?
Well, the real direction everyone in industry at least is trying to go is toward making real metal parts. And there is a lot of progress in that direction. In fact, the upsurge in interest and visibility of 3D printing in the past few years has come about because the ability to produce real metal parts, parts that have properties that are comparable to the same material if it were produced by another manufacturing process is very real, and that has caught the interest of many people in the industry, and so there's a lot of momentum in that direction.
And is it, would it be the same process as with plastic?
No.
Okay, as I mentioned, I'm thinking that, you would have to make this much more sturdy and durable.
Not only more sturdy, but operating at much higher temperature. Plastics, in this case, as I said, in the more basic process,
right.
The plastics melt at a sort of low temperature. Metals, obviously not. So you're talking about a much larger energy input, and therefore everything surrounding it, everything involved in the machine itself, is going to be much more robust and actually more difficult to control and handle. So there's a lot of challenges, but they're being overcome, and there are some real parts being made now in metal, in flight. And that's just another step in the ultimate direction of being able to make metal parts routinely by these 3D printing processes.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with University of Pittsburgh Professor Howard Kuhn, well-known researcher and consultant in the world of additive manufacturing, 3D printing. And if you have a comment or question about advancements and evolution of the industry, he can answer them for you as you try to wrap your mind around this new and developing technology, 3D printing technology. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, #EPLive. If you're someone who has used 3D printing technology, if you have one in your home, we'd like to hear from you. How's it going for you? Apparently, you have access to the same technology that everybody else does. So we'd like to hear your feedback on 3D printing. 412-246-2002. What can you tell us, Professor Kuhn, about the GE additive manufacturing plant that's coming to the Pittsburgh area? What would be built there?
Well, nothing particularly would be built in a sense. That center is intended to be a bridge between the research efforts that go on around the country, in fact, around the world, particularly, for example, at GE's Global Research Park, which is near Schenectady, and other research centers around the world. And GE, of course, has many divisions around the country, oil and gas. They have a medical products division. They have the aircraft engine division, of course. And those are all more production and design units. So what this facility in Findlay Township would do is bridge that gap between what research is available, what is known about different materials and processes, and the needs in the production sense in those production facilities. And so my understanding is it's 125,000 square feet, maybe 30 people. And they will be engineers. They'll have access to all the different additive manufacturing technologies as well as the design technologies that go with it. And they'll be able to develop, let's say, a new product for one of the divisions by accessing the latest in research on any one of these appropriate technologies and materials. And so it's really exciting that they're nearby. And I think what they're doing is taking advantage of the activity that's going on at Carnegie Mellon University, University of Pittsburgh, Penn State, and including Robert Morris over by the airport. They do considerable amount of work in this area as well.
How soon before 3D printing takes over the automotive industry?
First of all, 3D printing is primarily used for one-of-a-kind or unique kinds of parts that have very strange shapes that you couldn't produce by other methods. And so immediately it takes it out of the realm of the mass production the mass production kind of activity, which would be signature of automotive world. However, there are certain other aspects of production of automobiles where additive manufacturing plays quite a good role. And one of them is in simply producing templates that are and jigs and fixtures that are used during the assembly process. currently they're produced by a CNC machine or something very complicated that takes perhaps weeks to produce. And here in a matter of hours, you can produce this part and you use it, for example, to carefully place an emblem on an automobile. I've seen that as one very neat application lately. Another one that is currently being used in automotive industry is the use of additive manufacturing to produce tooling, meaning molds and tools and dies, to produce mass production parts for automobiles. So even though additive manufacturing isn't necessarily a perfect fit for mass production items like automobiles, there are ways in which it even enters in, additive manufacturing enters in that area of industry as well. So.
But you're saying that it's not particularly useful. 3D printing is not particularly useful at this point for large-scale manufacturing.
It's very useful for making parts that are very unusual, very strange shapes.
Right.
There's one other area that where it does make great economical sense, and that is when you are combining multiple parts into one. And the poster child for this is the fuel injector nozzle that GE is making and has already tested. It is an assembly of it conventionally. It's an assembly of 20 parts, but with additive manufacturing, instead of making 20 separate parts and brazing them together, which is a lot of hand operations, you can print this very complicated part in one pass, one operation. And thereby save all of the other operations that are involved. And that is an example that makes a great economic sense. And as I said, GE has bought into that. They have a plant going into Alabama that is going to make nothing but those fuel injector nozzles. It's a great example of where additive manufacturing can be applied to actually produce large quantities of parts. But it can't be used to make the everyday parts.
Okay. Interesting. And we'll get to that point where it can be used to make the larger everyday parts.
It is that's a long way off.
Okay.
It may.
Someday in the future.
Yeah.
412-246-2002 if you have a comment or question for Pitt Professor Howard Kuhn. Let's go to Harrison in Green Tree. Harrison, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi. I just had a quick comment and question. My friend and I, we went in on a 3D printer, and it's very finicky and whatnot. And I guess my question is, where around Pittsburgh can just a regular person just go to and have access to really high-quality 3D printing? I know UPS and I think the Carnegie Library in Oakland offers services, but I was just wondering if the professor knew any others.
One option for you would be go to the tech shop in Bakery Square.
Oh, okay.
Yep, definitely. I would definitely consult them. I know what you mean. The machines do become quite finicky, and in fact, it reflects one of the problems in this whole industry. But a lot of progress is being made toward improving reproducibility and reliability. But that's one option you can certainly do. There's another point. If you allow me to elaborate one bit further, I know it's a bit far away, but Youngstown is the location of the headquarters of an organization called America Makes, which is the National Additive Manufacturing Innovation Institute, and they have a whole variety of these kinds of processes and machines, and can provide some help for you. Perhaps.
So. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harrison. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Corbin in Pittsburgh. Corbin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, sir.
My question was going to be, now you had mentioned putting a machine, a 3D printing machine on the International Space Station and in different celestial colonies. I was wondering, with remote research on Earth, so let's say remote research in Alaska and even remote living, how can you see 3D printing technology changing the face of remote living or remote research as far as things like resupply and repair parts?
One of the objectives of 3D printing is to eventually build the lunar base itself using material on the moon or on Mars. And once that is done, then the additive manufacturing machines could be used internal to those lunar or Martian bases to produce other parts of use and of necessity in everyday operation in the lunar base, for example. So I think that additive manufacturing processes can find their way and revolutionize the way space exploration is really carried out.
Thank you for the call, Corbin. Let's take one last call from Adam in Imperial. Adam, welcome.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, sir.
Hey, my question is I'm a CNC machinist, and I've been trying to talk my company into investing in 3D printing. And my main thing, or their main concern, is the accuracy, because our tolerances are typically less than, like, a tenth of a millimeter. I was wondering, a scale of 10 parts, are they all going to be identical in size, or do we need to do some sort of calibration for each one?
No. The accuracy of 3D printing is certainly not as great as it would be in a CNC machine. No question about it. If you look at the physics of what is going on in each of those processes, it's understandable that the tolerance is going to be quite a bit different in additive manufacturing processes. Now, there's a lot of work going on to try to improve that, but by and large, you will not have anywhere near the accuracy you have with CNC machining. And if it's a critical surface, you have to resign yourself to the fact that that surface is going to have to be ground or machined or polished in some way. So I understand what you mean, but let me if I can take one more minute, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I want to give you an analog. There is a company called Morris Technologies in Cincinnati. They started as a CNC shop. They had Haas machines. They invested in a metal prototyping machine in the year 2000. They now have 22 of them. They have expanded tremendously what they have done. In fact, they produced the original fuel injector nozzle that I mentioned. That company was bought by GE. They're completely captured by GE. So my point is for you and your boss, investing in a 3D printing machine can lead to unknown benefits. So let me leave it at that.
All right. Hopefully that helps you, Adam. Thank you for the call. And as we wrap up here in just the last minute, Pittsburgh's has a role in this. Talk about the future growth of the city's technology base and educational foundation, and how the whole evolution of 3D printing in the Pittsburgh area plays into that.
It all blends together very well. There's a considerable amount of work, for example, at CMU and University and Penn State on. Modeling of these processes, and that's a necessary ingredient to further have deeper understanding of what those processes involve. At the University of Pittsburgh, we're using additive manufacturing in medical applications to great benefit. It will revolutionize the way surgeries are carried out in the future, and in fact, the way bone repair, tissue repair is going to occur in the future. Hang on.
Yeah, the future looks very interesting. University of Pittsburgh Professor Howard Kuhn is a well-known researcher and consultant in the world of additive manufacturing 3D printing, joining us here to talk about advancements and evolution of the industry. Dr. Kuhn, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure visiting with you.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure.
Coming up, the search for General Tao. We'll explore the history behind that iconic Chinese chicken dish and other Chinese foods. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.